Part 2. Embracing Your Cosmic Self. The Power of Personal Reality. What would it take to convince you that you have a cosmic self? Don't settle for a quick or easy reply. Taking on a cosmic self is like taking responsibility for everything we call real. In an epic poem, Song of Myself, Walt Whitman proclaimed his universal status with joyful abandon. I celebrate myself, and I sing myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. Rationally speaking, it sounds more than a little preposterous. But readers of poetry didn't take Whitman literally when he declared, I am large, I contain multitudes. And even though no one was better at making ecstasy go viral, as it were, few people were daring enough to follow Whitman's lead when he wrote, The clock indicates the moment, but what does eternity indicate? And he had a mind-blowing answer as well. Eternity indicates that human beings are children of the cosmos. Our life is beyond the boundaries of time. We have thus far exhausted trillions of winters and summers. There are trillions ahead, and trillions ahead of them. Births have brought us richness and variety, and other births will bring us richness and variety. This audiobook offers the same answer, not as poetry, but as a fact that overturns accepted conventional reality. The cosmic self isn't a pet theory, but the most fundamental self anyone possesses. If it didn't exist, neither would the physical world, including all the people and things in it. It is astonishing that a poet singing about himself should match the most far-sighted theories in modern physics. And yet he does. Do you see, O my brothers and sisters? It is not chaos or death. It is form, union, plan. It is eternal life. It is happiness. These words apply perfectly to the idea that we live in a conscious universe. Instead of the accepted theory that the properties of mind emerged from churning chaos over billions of years in the distant past, in a human universe, mind has been present at all times and in all places. In fact, beyond all times and all places. As an answer to the cosmic mysteries you've been listening to, this one remains standing after all the reasonable explanations have been dismantled. Nothing else makes sense. Do you see it? Too many open problems exist, such as quantum gravity, dark matter, dark energy, and more. Too much of reality is hidden from view. Too many extra dimensions are pure mathematical jiggling to get out of an impasse where theory fails to match reality. The old confidence has collapsed because the building blocks of nature, atoms and subatomic particles, turn out to possess no intrinsic properties without an observer. In the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, there comes the moment when the great sleuth is about to reveal the hidden solution to a crime, and the solution is bizarre and unexpected, such as when a poisonous snake, known as the speckled band, committed the murder by slithering down a bell cord used to ring for the servants. At such moments, Holmes likes to deliver a lesson in deductive reasoning and reminds his trusted sidekick, Dr. Watson, that when every other reasonable explanation has been ruled out, the one that remains, however improbable, must be correct. To be fair, there's a hole in Sherlock Holmes's lesson in deduction. Faced with a closed-room murder and a handful of suspects, the great detective could relatively quickly exhaust the reasonable solutions. The cosmos, however, is far from being a closed room. It gives almost infinite expanse for newer, more exotic theories, as the last 100 years have proved. No room for the mindless. Posing a conscious universe where human life is the whole point cannot simply be another item added to the menu. Unique among competing theories in cosmology, the conscious universe excludes all unconscious ones. They just don't have a reality, and we can't even imagine their reality because it is not there. It is as simple as that. Being conscious is like being pregnant or dead. Either you are or you aren't. No middle ground exists. In our view, the middle ground disappeared once and for all when we showed that the brain doesn't think. The human brain, as a physical thing, can't be the source of mind. By the same logic, the physical universe should be disqualified as the creator of the mind. The universe is huge compared with the human brain. But making a physical mechanism bigger doesn't make it smarter or even capable of thinking in the first place. Regardless of the shock and outrage among mainstream scientists, the only way that anything, an atom, brain, or the entire universe, can behave in a mind-like way is to be a mind. There is one escape route from this conclusion, however, the so-called clockwork universe of the 18th century Enlightenment. The intellectual trend at the time was to dispense with God as an active participant in how the universe operates from day to day. Yet the processes being observed by scientists, such as the regular order by which the elements fell into place by atomic weight, implied a non-random system. The solution was a kind of Solomon's judgment. God was allowed to set the universe in motion with perfect precision. But then he was packed off to heaven, while nature's clockwork mechanism kept humming along on its own. The notion of a clockwork universe seems quaint today, but it was almost the last time that scientists made peace, however uneasily, with consciousness as a serious scientific ingredient when explaining cosmic phenomena. The peace proved temporary. Once God was sent packing, there was never any reason to consider the possibility of a cosmic mind, except in metaphor, as when Einstein declared that he wanted to know how God's mind works, all the rest being details. Our intention isn't to bring God back, either by marching him in through the front door as creationists do, or by sneaking him in through the back way, as happens when mathematics is touted as the ultimate answer to all natural phenomena. Numbers are given a special heaven to live in, as it were. The first philosopher to trace reality to an invisible realm of pure existence was Plato, who held that anything of beauty or truth here on earth was a shadow of absolute beauty and truth in the beyond, reflected, so to speak, in the cave of existence. Today, mathematics occupies the Platonic realm, somehow holding aloof from physical existence in order to arrange it according to perfect mathematical laws. Being a word for transcendent values, Platonic is first cousin to divine. There's not much difference between calling the harmony of mathematics a Platonic trait or a gift from God. The problem with shutting God out or letting him in is the same both ways. Consciousness isn't in the universe any more than wetness is in water or sweetness in sugar. One doesn't say, "This water is almost right. We just have to add some wetness to it." Or, "I love this sugar, but it would be even better if you could figure out how to make it sweet." In the same way, consciousness isn't a magic dust you sprinkle on inert atoms to make them capable of thinking. Consciousness has to be there already. We have seen that mind-like behavior isn't a property of matter, quite the reverse. When it wants to, the cosmic mind can take on the properties of matter. At the quantum level, it can decide to behave like a wave or a particle. When such a choice is made, it's a mental choice, which shouldn't shock us. By definition, Choices are mental. We don't say, "My stomach decided to have oatmeal for breakfast." We decide to have oatmeal, not our bodies. The body participates in the choice, of course, because of the mind-body connection. If you're distracted, a rumbling stomach can remind you to eat, just as yawning can remind you to go to bed. Both sides, physical and mental, are allowed to participate. By turning its back on consciousness, mainstream science made a fateful decision it is slowly beginning to regret. Reality itself seems to demand that ignorance is no longer a valid excuse when it comes to mind and cosmos. The universe didn't become mindless with the stroke of a pen. This was a collective decision made at the outset of modern science. At the time, 400 to 200 years ago, a mindless mechanical universe made perfect sense, as we can illustrate through a story everyone learns at school, about Isaac Newton and the apple. The incident is so familiar it would seem to have no hidden dimensions. But it does. It's worth recounting the details as told by Newton to a colleague, William Stuckel. Spoiler alert, the apple didn't hit Newton on the head. "We went into the garden and drank tea under the shade of some apple trees, only he and myself. Amidst other discourse, he told me, he was just in the same situation as when formerly the notion of gravitation came into his mind. Why should that apple always descend perpendicularly to the ground?" thought he to himself, occasioned by the fall of an apple as he sat in a contemplative mood. "Why should it not go sideways or upwards, but constantly to the earth's center? Assuredly, the reason is that the earth draws it. There must be a drawing power in matter, and the sum of the drawing power in the matter of the earth must be in the earth's center, not in any side of the earth. Therefore, does this apple fall perpendicularly or toward the center? If matter thus draws matter, it must be in proportion of its quantity. Therefore, the apple draws the earth, as well as the earth draws the apple." This was a favorite anecdote of Newton's, which scholars believe he, in all probability, fabricated, although some commentators don't entirely buy the aha moment of the falling apple, but presume that he had been cogitating about gravity for a while already. In any case, the hidden dimension in the anecdote isn't about what it says, but what it doesn't say. Newton and the apple is a prime example of arriving at a truth by excluding everything that doesn't specifically apply. For example, the variety of apple is being ignored, along with the weather, the look of the landscape, Newton's state of health, the clothes he was wearing, and so on. We are so accustomed to excluding all unscientific experiences that it has become second nature. We celebrate the fact that the rational mind has this power to focus so sharply and narrowly on nature's mechanics. On the face of it, reality is inclusive. In fact, it's all-inclusive. Excluding daily experience is an arbitrary mental act. It may yield an astonishing idea like Newton's theory of universal gravitation. Particularly brilliant was his insight that the apple's gravitational force draws the earth at the same time as the earth's gravity draws the apple. But exclusion betrays how reality actually works. This didn't particularly bother scientists of the Enlightenment as they dismantled the clockwork universe to discover all its moving parts. But today, we live in the uncertain universe, one in which there's actually a tiny fractional possibility that an apple can fall sideways or upward, according to quantum probabilities. And the greatest uncertainty of all is reality slipping through our fingers. Exclusionism has many successes to its credit, But the human mind is inclusive to begin with. When the waiter places a beautiful chef's creation before you in a restaurant, you don't say, "Give me a moment, I can't decide whether to look, taste, touch, smell, or listen to this food." We take in the whole scene, all the time, and this happens far beyond the scope of the conscious mind. Under hypnosis, subjects can often recall childhood memories with photographic exactness, down to counting the number of steps leading to the attic. Heeding nature's message to be inclusive conforms to everyday experience. Newton himself was not a perfect exclusionist. A devout Christian, he believed literally in the chronology of history outlined in the Old Testament. In other words, he was a splitter, allowing natural laws to govern the physical world while bowing to God as ruler of the spiritual world. But being a splitter, or dualist, to use the formal term, was only a stopping point on the journey to total exclusionism once God was removed from the picture entirely in the modern era. In today's landscape, to speak about superstrings or the multiverse involves a conscious decision to exclude all of reality except for a thin mathematical sliver. And even that sliver is just a hypothesis. To reverse course and choose inclusionism implies a seismic shift in how we approach reality. Every time reality is sliced up into data, a piece of the truth is being exchanged for the whole truth, a bad bargain. Splitting the difference became discredited once God left the building. But he held on for quite a while around the margins. Efforts to weigh the soul as it left the body at the moment of death continued well into the 19th century. But in vain. Recently, however, the scientific equivalent of soul research has gained newfound respectability through the concept of panpsychism, which makes mind a property of matter. We think this is a dead end. Panpsychism sounds holistic, which is positive, but it fails to really explain anything. One remains stuck with the mind-like behavior of atoms. That's not an answer. It's the problem needing to be solved. Viewed skeptically, panpsychism looks like the most retro move physics has ever made. Jumping back to animism and other Aboriginal beliefs that spirit abides in all things. Even so, the positives of